Major League Baseball opens on March 29th. Joining me on the telephone is our friend Tony Andracki, who writes for NBCSports.com Chicago. He covers the Cubs, he covers the Bulls, he covers the White Sox, he covers the Bears. Anything that's going on in that area, he's covering it. He was covering the Olympics earlier last month. Tony, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. You're a busy guy. I see you writing about all kinds of different topics when it comes to sports. And in our case, what we're interested right now in is the Cubs. Because we just found out yesterday, and we knew he wasn't coming back to the Cubs, but that Jake Arrieta signed with the Phillies. What's been the reaction, maybe, that you've heard from Arizona, from the Cubs players, their former teammates of Arrieta, and just around your office? Is that a surprise? Is that the team everyone thought he'd go to?
You know, I think there's the two main reactions I've seen from between Cubs players and fans, I think, is relief, but it's kind of a twofold relief. So on the one hand, everybody's excited and glad that Jake Arrieta finally has a job. And then everybody's really excited that he's not pitching in the Cubs division. So, you know, he's going to a Phillies team that's rebuilding and probably not going to contend for even the NL pennant this year, let alone, like, the World Series. So, you know, I imagine that it's similar to the move that the Cubs made with John Lester ahead of the 2015 season. You know, the Phillies will be able to contend pretty soon, they hope. They want, you know, a legitimate, proven, battle-tested ace atop that staff. But, you know, at the same time, they're probably not going to contend against the Cubs this year. And, you know, the fact that he got $75 million, you know, 25-ish a year on an average salary, that's pretty good money. That sets him up for the rest of his life and still sets him up to be able to get a new contract at age 35 if he's still pitching strong. So, you know, I think everybody's just happy that he finally got a job and, you know, wish that he would have gotten a job sooner in the off season and not, like you said, just over 2 weeks until opening day. But at least it's some relief now. And, you know, on the other hand, a lot of Cubs fans didn't want him to sign with Milwaukee and help boost the Brewers in the division, too. So everybody's happy all around, it seems.
I want to ask you this, and I know this has been covered a little bit, but I'm always baffled by this. Here's Jake Arrieta, seemingly from everything that we can tell on the outside, is liked by his teammates, doesn't cause trouble, pretty businesslike. I mean, you know, because when he came to the Cubs, he had a chip on his shoulder. He just did not succeed when he was in Baltimore, and he wanted to prove that he had something to offer, and boy, he did. So he's there. He's part of the culture that was created in Chicago, ultimately, by Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer. And then they say, you know what, we're going to sign this other free agent who's, what, 2 years younger than you are for the kind of money you're looking for, and hey, thanks for everything, good luck. That doesn't make sense to me because Arrieta, unless there's something I don't know about, he fits in the clubhouse. He's well-liked. He's dependable. He maybe is not what he was in his Cy Young season, but is he that much less than Darvish? And they committed to Darvish, you know, if Darvish wants to, for a long time. So where am I wrong on that?
So I don't know if it's wrong per se, but I think it's just a matter of the perceived value of a guy like Arrieta or a guy like Darvish. Arrieta went into the offseason talking about $200 million. It's Scott Boras as an agent who notoriously, you know, is stubborn in the right kind of ways for an agent to, you know, hopefully get his players as much money as possible. And, you know, you Darvish didn't. He didn't have the Scott Boras factor. He didn't go into the offseason wanting $200 million. And so I think that's a major difference. You know, it wasn't just a matter of, like, okay, could the Cubs have signed Arrieta for 3 years, $75 million? Maybe they could have, but that's not exactly where things were a couple weeks ago. I mean, I don't imagine that Arrieta, you know, at the end of February or right before spring training, even in the mid-February, right before spring training, everybody reports, he wasn't wanting that. He was still holding out hope that he would get something more, and he ended up not. But, you know, this deal that he got is pretty solid. But what the Cubs did is, you know, they got 5 years, you know, $126 million for Darvish, and that's that. It helps them because it's less than $25 million a year towards that, the whole, like, salary cap and luxury tax. it's based on the average salary for a guy. So that really helps them keep under the salary for, you know, if they want to go after Bryce Harper or if they want to acquire somebody mid-season, say a relief pitcher, to gear up for the stretch run. So I think that helps more than anything. But at the same time, you know, it's just about Darvish went into the offseason with already $60 million made in his MLB career. Arrieta had only made about $30 million. It was like half that. So this was the one big contract in Arrieta's life, and Darvish wasn't out for the same thing. So I think it's just the perceived value and not even so much as, yeah, he's a good fit and it's only 1 year difference. But then, you know, honestly, on the other hand, too, is Arrieta had the velocity dip last year. So there's a bit of a concern there. I don't think a huge concern. The Cubs would have been very happy if they were able to bring him back on some deal as the market, you know, kind of slimmed down for Arrieta. But really, it was just a matter of what things, you know, nobody expected Arrieta to sign on March 11th. So it's all been crazier than anybody expected this winter.
Yeah, the dynamics of free agency this year are different than they've ever been before. You're seeing players just this past weekend in the last 3 or 4 days with Mike Moustakas and Lance Lynn signed for considerably less than they were offered in just the qualifying offer of the team that they had just played for, in Moustakas' case, the Royals, in Lynn's case, the Cardinals. You mentioned Bryce Harper and the Cubs going after Bryce Harper, and there's been a lot of talk about that, and even, you know, you hear things, I think Chris Bryant has even sort of hinted at that. They're both friends. They know each other. They're both from, Las Vegas, right? So they know each other. They kind of grew up together. The families know each other. So here's my question about Bryce Harper. If a team like the Cubs, and this is where success is a double-edged sword, the Cubs have done such a good job of finding talent and acquiring talent from other teams. So in Bryant's case, you've got Chris Bryant, and when time comes and he becomes a free agent and you want to keep him because he's one of the faces of the franchise, if you sign a player like Bryce Harper for the kind of money that's being talked about for Bryce Harper, $400 million, what does that do to your ability to keep players like Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo? Do they become unaffordable? That's a lot of money, and you'd have to pay three guys that kind of money.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and I don't think we'll know the full answer for, you know, another few years, especially even if, you know, the Cubs do get Harper. If they don't, obviously, you know, that's simple. But I think it's going to be difficult to re-sign Chris Bryant either way. It's not what Cubs fans are going to want to hear, but you know, he'll be approaching his age 30 season when he gets into free agency. He's also a Boris client, and this will be like the one huge payday that he'll be able to get. So, yeah, if he gets out, you know, into free agency and he's looking for something close to $400 million in a few years, like his buddy Bryce Harper, I don't see how the Cubs will be able to manage both of those. But then again, you never know. I mean, another World Series or two, and, you know, they can be printing money on Chicago's north side with everything they're doing with, you know, new hotel and changes in the neighborhood. And, you know, they're making the Cubs so much more of a brand than they ever have been before. So, you know, at that point, like, maybe they'll just build around both Bryant and Harper. You know, Rizzo's already given the team a hometown discount with the extension he signed as a young player well before he even got to, like, arbitration years. Maybe he does that again. It's going to be difficult either way. But I think in reality, if the Cubs want to keep all of these guys, they can get it done. It's going to be much tougher with the Addison Russells and Javier Baez of the world to keep those guys around when they're going to want $20-plus million a year and you're going to be paying, you know, a ton of money to Brian Rizzo and maybe Wilson Contreras and, you know, maybe keeping like Kyle Hendricks around. And at that point, you know, you're still going to be paying you Darvish when you're talking just a couple years down the road. So, yeah, I think more it'll probably affect more guys like Addison Russell if Bryce Harper signs. But, you know, at the same time, I think Cubs will be happy with only another 3 years of Addy if it means that they get Bryce Harper matched with Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo in that lineup.
Well, see, here's the reason I bring the whole thing up, and that is, in my mind, I'm not so sure that Harper's the better player and that Bryant isn't the guy that they should focus on. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, Harper is, he has a hard time playing a full season. Chris Bryant seems to be pretty durable. Bryant is more versatile. You can play him in all kinds of different spots. And I'm not so sure he's not a better hitter than Bryce Harper. Harper had that one monster season, but he hasn't had the consistency, although he's been up longer. So, see, what I'm saying is if they're going to pick one, just from an outsider's perspective, I'd rather have Bryant than Harper, but not everybody might agree with that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in the sense that Harper still has a lot to prove. He has to be able to stay healthy and maintain that health for, you know, a full year. But when he's out there, I mean, you can ask any pitcher in the league. He is one of the guys that teams game plan around, and, you know, they're scared to face him. It's as much as a big league pitcher can be scared of another hitter. You know, Harper induces that fear in others. And Bryant does as well, but it's not the same kind of fear where, you know, every pitch you throw, you think it could end up 500 feet in the bleachers. It's more, Chris Bryant's such a good player in every aspect. You know, he has awesome MVP-type years, even when he doesn't drive in 100 runs or hit 30 homers, because he's such a good base runner. He's such a good fielder. He takes all his pitches and, you know, does whatever he can. He can hit leadoff if the Cubs wanted him to, or he can hit three or four. So, yeah, he can do so many things well, and like you said, play multiple positions. So I agree with you. When it comes down to, like, whether Bryant or Harper's a better player, Bryant might be slightly better in some aspects. But I think the idea of possibly getting both on the same team would make every Cubs fan, and would make Theo and so on salivate, to be able to have, you know, put Bryce Harper in your two hole, and then Chris Bryant three, and Anthony Rizzo four. I mean, that's a dream. A dream lineup. So I don't think it's an either-or situation right now. I think it's more of, hey, you know, go get Bryce Harper for the next 3 or 4 years, you know, and pair him with Chris Bryant, and then we can worry about the Chris Bryant problem in, you know, 2022. But, you know, right now I do agree with you. It's tough to just automatically say Harper's better, but I'd love to see what those two guys can do on the same team.
All right. You spent the Olympics in, was it in New York? With NBC Sports in New York?
In Connecticut. Stamford, Connecticut.
Right. Okay, so their big operation, and this happens every Olympics, NBC will set up shop, and they'll have a headquarters. They'll have a United States headquarters for their media coverage, and you were working that. Give us a little idea of what you were doing and, you know, the hundreds and maybe thousands of people that were there with you helping to bring Olympic coverage to people on multiple platforms, not just the telecasts that we saw.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's the second Olympics that I've covered now, and really I cannot get over the awe-inspiring way in which NBC goes about it. I mean, they have this building designed to house everybody for the Olympics, and there, like you said, there are hundreds, and I don't know exactly what the number is, but there are hundreds and hundreds of people and freelancers are within the NBC field, an umbrella, that go to work for the Olympics and spend the 3 weeks to a month in Stanford. And then there are so many others. I had a colleague, Scott Chagnon, who went to Pyeongchang, and he shot for men's hockey there as well. So there are so many people that get to experience the Olympics in the field, and they get to, you know, experience it from the Stanford area as well. So it's really incredible. I worked for NBCOlympics.com, so I was part of the homepage for 12 hours a day. So I was in charge of really promoting everything around there. So I was one of the lucky ones. I didn't have to work the overnight shift, but we had a lot of people that were working overnight, and just because they had to, you know, because that's when the games were in South Korea. So it's really an incredible operation. I can't believe how they're able to do everything between TV and streaming and everything else with this site. It's incredible.
I'd be remiss if I didn't remind everyone that Tony is a product of Illinois State University and wrote for The Vedette, and he still has friends there and people that, for lack of a better term, he sort of serves as a sounding board, an advisor, a mentor, that sort of thing. Usually the people that graduate and move on and become successful kind of look back, and you start to make contact with those classes and even those generations behind you that you didn't go to school with. And so that's how I got hooked up with Tony to talk to him today. And we enjoy the information that he provides on NBCSports.com Chicago. And every once in a while, we can catch you on TV, can't we?
Yeah, every now and then. Kind of rare, but maybe it'll be changing. We'll see.
All right. Very good. Well, Tony, hopefully we can talk to you again here down the road a month or two and just touch base and see how things are going with the Cubs or maybe some other sports story that breaks in Chicago. It's good to have you a phone call away.
Yeah, sounds great. I'll be ready whenever.